సతో జయముదీరయే నష్టప్రాయేష్వభద్రేషు నిత్యం భాగవత సేవయా భగవత్యుత్తమ శ్లోకే భక్తిర్భవతి నైష్టికి కృష్ణాయ వాసుదేవాయ దేవకీ నందనాయ చ నందగోపకుమారాయ గోవిందాయ నమో నమః.
Started something called as Amal Puran tutorials. So he used to make some quizzes and questions on Bhagavatam and conduct a program and give quizzes to people. He was doing that. From there only I was inspired to get this name, Amal Puran tutorials. So in the future new temple we will have Rajavidya tutorials, Amal Puran tutorials and Golden Avatar tutorials. Three we will have. So whoever wants to join, whichever. Rajavidya will be for which one? Golden Avatar for? Yeah. So the whole idea is you whatever tutorials you want to call, you can call, but devotees have to come together and study. That was one of the goals, Prabhupada's instruction, that devotees should come together and study Bhagavatam. Secondly, many of you have a lot of active services. You are in a position of a leader. And leaders often find that they don't get enough time to complete their sadhana quota. So every week we would like to make sure that we come together for a couple of hours where we study Bhagavatam together. And our style of study would be something similar to what I was doing some time before. You'll be reading verse by verse and translation and purport. I'll add some little points here and there. Some vital points we may catch in the purport and underline. And this volume, you all have this volume with you? Yeah. Anyway, big one also you can have. This volume, we are planning to complete it in this semester by end of December. But we are not meeting every week. You all might have got the dates. We are only meeting 12 times in 6 months. That comes to how much? 3 months in 6 months. Which means only half of the 6 months period we are meeting. And that way you also get some break in between. I mean, I am traveling out of Pune so that you can complete your other duties. So when we come for this program, I would request all of you to be prompt in this program on the specific dates given to you so that we will be continuing it from the beginning. And we will pray to our spiritual master and pray to Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas and to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna Himself and His internal potency, Srimati Radharani, to bless us in this endeavor, that let it not be a start like a flower pot which starts and ends, but which goes on for a long time to come. Actually, we have how many volumes of this small, anybody knows, in total? 30? 44 we have, including the 10th canto, right? In 10th canto. In that, some of the volumes we may not go through, which is like 5th canto of Bhagavatam. It's full of structure of the universe and all that. We may not go through. So, assuming that we have about, say, 36 or so, I think, volumes which we will be studying. So, every year probably we'll be able to complete two volumes. So, in say, about next 10-12 years, probably we may complete Bhagavatam. If you are continuing in this space, if you go in this space, 10-12 years. So we are beginning from the first verse. We will not recite all the verses, only some selected verses we will recite. And other verses we will read only translation.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. జన్మాద్యస్య యతోన్వయాదితరతశ్చార్తేశ విజ్ఞస్వరాట్ తేనే బ్రహ్మ హృదయ ఆది కవయే ముహ్యంతి యత్ సూరయః తేజో వారి మృదాం యథా వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృషా ధామ్నా స్వేన సదా నిరస్త కుహకం satyam param dhimahi.
So in this first verse of Bhagavatam you'll find Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He says Namo Bhagavate, which means I offer my salutations to Vasudeva, who is Krishna. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says Mamekam Sharanam Braja, surrender only unto me. And here it begins with Namo Bhagavate, I am surrendering unto you. The end of Bhagavad Gita is the beginning of Bhagavatam. And also this verse ends with Satyam Param Dhimahi, which means Krishna, the absolute truth, is the subject and goal of Srimad Bhagavatam. Supreme Lord Krishna. So in this first verse you will find there is a definition of the absolute truth. Janmadyasya yataha means from whom everything emanates. Anvayat itarataha means that absolute truth, Vasudeva or Krishna, he knows all the truths directly and indirectly. We will see what is that anvayat itaratas. It will come in the purport. And abhigya means one who knows everything. And swarat means one who is independent. And then tene brahma hrida ya adi kavaye. And he gave the absolute knowledge to Lord Brahma, who is called as Adi Kavi. And then he says, Muhyanti Atsureha. And about him, even the demigods are put into bewilderment. They cannot know him. And then Tejo Vari Mridam, which means sometimes on land we find water, which is like a Mrigatrishna or Mirage. Or sometimes on fire we find a land, which is an illusory appearance. In the same manner, he says that Trisarga means the three worlds, middle, upper and lower planetary systems. Dhamna svena sada nirasta kohakam satyam param dhimahi. Now we will read the translation. Oh my Lord Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, oh all pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations and is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living entity, living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. In the purport, it's a very long purport. We will read some sections of this purport. So he's saying here, obeisances unto the purport by his divine grace is Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Shall Prabhupada ki? Obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Vasudeva directly indicate Lord Sri Krishna, who is the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. So in Chandogya Upanishad there is a mention that Brahmanyo Devaki Putraha, like that there is a statement. The Supreme Brahman will become the son of Devaki. There is also a statement that the Supreme Lord is son of Vasudev and Devaki. That is also in Upanishads. That's why he is saying Vasudeva is nothing but Krishna, he is saying. And then proper substantiating further points. Below, Prabhupada mentioning, in the Samaved Upanishad, it is also stated that Lord Sri Krishna is the divine son of Devaki. Therefore, in this prayer, the first proposition holds that Lord Sri Krishna is the primeval Lord, and if any transcendental nomenclature is to be understood as belonging to the absolute personality of Godhead, it must be the name indicated by the word Krishna, which means the all-attractive. You see, Here Prabhupada differentiates these two words, Lord Sri Krishna and Krishna. He is saying Lord Sri Krishna is the primeval Lord. And then he is saying, if any nomenclature is to be understood to be belonging to the absolute personality of Godhead, it should be indicated by the name Krishna, which means all attractive. So what is the difference between these two, Krishna and Lord Sri Krishna? Krishna is the term used by the devotees of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. They call him as Krishna. Nobody calls him as Lord Sri Krishna there. But when the same Krishna comes as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, he is called as Lord Sri Krishna. He is called as Lord Sri Krishna. You will see, when Krishna appeared in the womb of Vasudeva and Devaki, he appeared as Vishnu first. And then he becomes a small child, Krishna. And that child was carried to Gokul. And when he was carried to Gokul, by the side of Yashoda, there were two babies. One Krishna and one Yogamaya. They both were there. So, but when Vasudev went there, he only saw Yogamaya. He couldn't see that Krishna. So he left his son Krishna and he picked up Yogamaya and came back. So this Krishna merged into that Krishna. So Vasudev Krishna merged, that means Lord Sri Krishna merges into Krishna. So the one who was born to Yashoda and Nanda Baba is Lord Sri Krishna or Krishna? Krishna. And one born to Vasudeva and Devaki is Lord Sri Krishna. Yeah. That's the difference. But here what it says, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Why? When you say Janmadhyase, all the universes have come from Lord Sri Krishna. Not from Krishna. Why? Because Krishna doesn't do any work. Krishna is in the spiritual world. He only does pastimes. Creation, maintenance, annihilation is not his job. That's the job of Vasudev Krishna, who expands. Also killing the demons is whose job? Vasudev Krishna's job, yeah. That's why Prabhupada is saying that. You see, further Prabhupada says, in the Padma Purana it is also stated that out of innumerable names of Lord, the name of Krishna is the principal one. Vasudev indicates the plenary portion of the personality of Godhead. And all different forms of the Lord being identical with Vasudev are indicated in this text. The name Vasudev particularly indicates the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. And then Prabhupada writes in the next para, Vasudeva or Lord Sri Krishna is the cause of all causes. Because Vasudev Krishna is the source of all the universes, from him only the Mahavishnu expands. And then further Garbhodaksha Vishnu, Kshiradaksha Vishnu, all of them expand. You can come below, next paragraph. It is natural that a philosophical mind wants to know about the origin of the creation. At night he sees the stars in the sky and he naturally speculates about their inhabitants. Such inquiries are natural for man because man has a developed consciousness which is higher than that of the animals. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. He says that the Lord Sri Krishna is the origin of all creations. So here Prabhupada is saying that when we look at the stars in the sky and other planets, so we naturally wonder, on the earth planet we are all living, in those planets is someone living? We are curious to know. We have such inquiries. And who is the source of all that? Who created all these things? We have a question. And then he says, direct answer, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Janmadhyase Yataha, from whom everything has emanated. To explain this point, further Prabhupada gives 2-3 very beautiful examples. Prabhupada is saying further that he is not only creator of the universe, but he is also destroyer as well and all that. And below you see, the modern scientist, for example, has created space satellites, and by some arrangement or other, these satellites are thrown into outer space to fly for some time at the control of the scientist who is far away. Similarly, all the universes with innumerable stars and planets are controlled by the intelligence of the personality of Godhead. Such a beautiful example. Recently I was hearing this Air France, one of the planes which was controlled by radar and everything. It suddenly, went out of control. Nobody knew where it went. It got disappeared practically. So a scientist throws a satellite in orbit And then sitting in his own control room, he is controlling it. From a distance, away from the satellite. Similarly, Prabhupada is saying that the Lord has thrown all these planets into these universes and then he is controlling from a distance. That's analogy. Lord is in his own spiritual world. From there he is controlling all the planets with his Shakti. If a modern man who is a tiny part and parcel of Krishna, if he can throw a satellite in orbit or Sputnik in orbit and control it, can't God control it? Why can't he do? So he gives a beautiful example. And then further he is talking about Brahma and other living entities. Below you can see, I think 8th or 10th line in the next paragraph. If a man's brain can produce a space satellite, one can very easily imagine how brains higher than man can produce similarly wonderful things which are far superior. The reasonable person will easily accept this argument. But there are stubborn atheists who would never agree. Srila Vyasadeva, however, at once accepts the Supreme Intelligence as the Parameshwara. He offers his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Intelligence addressed as the Para or Parameshwara or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here one more thing Prabhupada is saying here. We told you now that a scientist has put a Sputnik on orbit, a satellite on orbit. But in order to do that, certainly it will require a lot of brain. Is it not true? No ordinary person can do such a thing. It requires a great brain. Similarly, for putting so many planets in orbit in this world also will require a much, much more gigantic brain. Elsewhere, Prabhupada is saying, Einstein's brain was very much appreciated by other scientists and he was accepted as genius of the century. But Einstein did not create his own brain. It was created by God. Nor can Einstein create brain of another scientist. Nor can you store Einstein's brain and do a transplantation of brain and use it with somebody else. You can't do that. God has given the brain to him for some period of time. So, God is such a gigantic brain that he has the brain to do these things and he also gives brain to the living entities also. He says. Then, you can see below, next paragraph. Unscrupulous persons go immediately to the 10th canto and especially to the 5 chapters which describe the Lord's Ras Dance. This portion of Srimad Bhagavatam is the most confidential part of the greatest literature. Unless one is thoroughly accomplished in the transcendental knowledge of the Lord, one is sure to misunderstand the Lord's worshipable transcendental pastimes called Ras Dance and his love affairs with the gopis. The subject matter is highly spiritual and only liberated persons who have gradually attained to the stage of Paramahamsa can transcendentally relish this Ras Dance. Therefore, Srila Vedavyas gives the reader the chance to gradually develop spiritual realization before actually relishing the essence of the pastimes of the Lord. Therefore, he purposely invokes the Gayatri Mantra, Dhimahi. This Gayatri Mantra is meant for spiritually advanced people. When one is successful in chanting Gayatri Mantra, he can enter into the transcendental position of the Lord. One must therefore acquire Brahminical qualities or be perfectly situated in the quality of goodness in order to chant the Gayatri Mantra successfully and then attain to the stage of transcendentally realizing the Lord. So, chanting of the Gayatri will help us to come to the platform of goodness. Or in other words, we can say that one who cultivates goodness will also become a Brahmana and he will chant Gayatri. You know, we take the Dvija, the sacred thread, to chant Gayatri. So by chanting Gayatri, we will come to the platform of goodness in which the scriptures are very easy to understand. If we are in Rajoguna and Tamaguna, then we may consider the pastimes of the Lord also to be in Rajoguna and Tamaguna. Sometimes people enjoy hearing Ras Leela. Why? Because they are in Rajoguna and they think this is like some man-woman affair. They enjoy hearing it in Rajoguna. Such kind of hearing will be useless. So, he says, Satyam Param Dhimahi, he says. So, he invokes the Gayatri Mantra so that we chant the Gayatri and elevate ourselves to goodness. And from goodness, we will post ourselves to transcendence by coming to the understanding of Vasudev. He is saying, that's a point made here. Similarly, you will read this verse in 10th canto. Vikreditam vrajabadu viridam cha vishno shraddhanvita anushunyat atavarnayedya bhaktim param bhagavati pratilabhya kamam hridrogam ashvapahinoti achirena dhirah. This verse says, anyone who hears the playful pastimes of Krishna with the gopis in the form of Ras Dance, their heart disease of lust will be purified. And that such a person will become a dhira, he says. In that verse, he uses the word Vishnu, not Krishna. Vikriditam Brajavadubir Idamcha Vishnu. The playful pastimes of Lord Vishnu with the Braja gopis. It says, have you ever seen Lord Vishnu with four hands dancing with gopis? Any picture you have seen? Such a thing has never happened till now, don't worry. Because Vishnu never dances with gopis, only Krishna dances. Then why the word Vishnu is used? To tell people that Krishna is not an ordinary blue covered boy. Krishna is Sakshat Vishnu or Vishnu is Sakshat Krishna. And Vishnu is often considered as one who is omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, all powerful. And Krishna is often thought of to be a human being. That is why purposefully the word Vishnu is used by Sukadeva Goswami. Vikriditam Brajavadubhi Ritam Cha Vishnu. So, if you go to a movie and hear a duet song between a hero and heroine, your mind becomes more hyperactive and agitated. Then when you are going out, you are whistling after a girl. Whereas, when you hear the pastimes of gopis and Krishna, you become Dhira Purusha. Why? Because these are on transcendental platform. So one should not directly go to the 10th canto and read them, rather one should go canto by canto and study Bhagavatam. That's the point. Below, in the next paragraph, leave a few lines, four or five lines. So Vyasadeva says herein that the manifested internal potency is real, whereas the external manifested energy in the form of material existence is only temporary and illusory, like the mirage in the desert. In the desert, mirage, there is no actual water. There is only the appearance of water. Real water is somewhere else. The manifested cosmic creation appears as reality. But reality of which this is but a shadow is in the spiritual world. So in the Tejo Vari Mridam Yatha Vinimayo Yatra Trisargom Risha, there we read that there is material world, there is spiritual world. And why material world exists? Because it's a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. That point he says. The proof of the real water is mirage. The proof of the real currency note is counterfeit note. The proof of the real gold is roll gold. You can say. The proof of the real marble is, you know, imitation marble we have. Or this carpet. Carpet marble or whatever, like that. The proof of any real thing is the fake thing. The fake thing actually is temporary and the real thing is eternal. Like that he is saying. Below, see in the last four lines of the same paragraph. In actuality, there is no reality in the manifested world. Because all this Brahma, Indra, Chandra, they all exist as demigods and they all perish and pass away. So in actuality, there is no reality in the manifested world. There appears to be reality. However, because of the true reality which exists in the spiritual world, where the personality of Godhead eternally exists with his transcendental paraphernalia. And then Prabhupada comes to another very important point, the next paragraph. The chief engineer of a complicated construction does not personally take part in the construction, but he knows every nook and corner because everything is done under his direction. He knows everything about the construction, both directly and indirectly. Similarly, the personality of Godhead, who is supreme engineer of this cosmic creation, knows every nook and corner, although affairs are being carried out by demigods, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant. No one is independent. That's another point. Okay. So that independent is Swarat. Directly, indirectly, that point is Anvayat Itaratash. For example, all of us, we will know, say if an ant is biting my back, immediately my hand will go there, pick up the ant and put him somewhere else. Don't bite me. Isn't it? Because the sensation is there. Like that, the whole universe is like the Lord's body. Anything happening in any corner of the universe, the Lord can know it. So he has the direct knowledge. So we also have direct knowledge of our body. But we don't have indirect knowledge. What is indirect knowledge? So if you ask one of you how many hairs you have on your head, that knowledge we don't have. Then like for example, what's happening inside the body, in a particular part of your body right now, we can't say exactly. Sometimes a virus enters into our system, we don't even know much. We have to rush to a doctor and ask, something has gone into my body creating trouble. Because we don't know much about the inside things of the body. But Lord knows directly and indirectly, he says, about everything, anything about the truth. Like we have a limitation even with microscopes and telescopes, right? Whereas the Lord has no limitation. Up to the finest, whatever man knows, nano, like for example, nanosecond or picosecond and all that man says, even below that the Lord can know. He is all knowing. That's the meaning of all knowing. Directly and indirectly. In fact, modern man knows a small portion of the truths of this universe. Then he is saying, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, no one is independent in the material creation. The hand of the Lord is seen everywhere. All material elements as well as spiritual spark emanate from him only. And then he is giving an example below. A chemist can manufacture water in the chemical laboratory by mixing hydrogen and oxygen. But in reality, the living entity works in the laboratory under the direction of the Supreme Lord. And the materials with which he works are also supplied by the Lord. So, you can read 3.11 in Bhagavad Gita. There Prabhupada gives three lists. First list he is saying, the water, the air, the light, and these are all essential ingredients for living. And Lord is providing it through sunlight, moonlight, rain, fall, breeze, all these things, without which human beings cannot survive. So number one, Lord is supplying these things. Then Prabhupada says the second list. He says fruits, vegetables, cereals, grains, these are all provided also by God through the earth. And man cannot eat nuts and bolts, he says. So the second list is also provided by him. Third, he says, the ores like the iron ore, manganese, sulfur, gold, silver, metals, they are also provided by the Lord. And the man takes these things and develops the industries. So that's what Prabhupada is saying. No one is independent in this world. Whatever items we use, we depend on Krishna for getting them. Like water to drink, food to eat, and even the industries to run. We need the help of the Lord. But Lord is totally independent, he says. Below you see, he gives another example. Okay, the Lord knows everything directly, indirectly. He is cognizant of all minute details. He is fully independent. He is compared to mine of gold. And the cosmic creations in so many different forms are comparable to objects made of gold, such as gold rings, necklaces and so on. The gold ring and gold necklace are qualitatively one with the gold in the mine, but qualitatively, quantitatively the gold in the mine is different. Therefore, the absolute truth is simultaneously one and different. Nothing is absolutely equal with the absolute truth. But at the same time, nothing is independent of the absolute truth. Which means, no truth can exist separate from Krishna. That's why we are all, the whole world is called as relative truth, we say. So Krishna is absolute truth. Which means every other truth depends on him for its survival. As Krishna says, everything is sustained by me. See the next paragraph, Prabhupada is saying, conditioned souls beginning from Brahma, who engineers the entire universe down to the insignificant ant, are all creating, but none of them are independent of the Supreme Lord. The materialist wrongly thinks that there is no creator other than his own self. This is called maya or illusion. Below, Prabhupada is saying, whatever happens to the body quickly becomes known to the embodied. Similarly, the creation is the body of the absolute whole. Therefore, absolute knows everything directly and indirectly that happens in the creation. And then below, everything emanates from him and everything is maintained by him. At the end, everything enters into him. In this subsequent page, Prabhupada is giving both the views, what the scientists are thinking and what Vedavyas is saying. Back and forth he goes, this way, that way, in order to explain to us what scientists are thinking and how it is wrong, what Vedavyas is saying, how it is right. Again he says, but the scientists say like this, but Vedavyas says like this. You will see that. Below, material scientists take it for granted that the ultimate source of all the planetary system is the sun. But they are unable to explain the source of the sun. Herein, the ultimate source is explained. According to the Vedic literature, Brahma, whom may be compared to the sun, is not the ultimate creator. It is stated in this shloka that Brahma was taught Vedic knowledge by the personality of Godhead. One may argue that Brahma, being the original living being, could not be inspired because there was no other living being at that time. Here it is stated that the Supreme Lord is Supreme Lord inspired the secondary creator Brahma in order that Brahma could carry out his creative functions. So the supreme intelligence behind all creations is absolute Godhead Sri Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna states that it is he only who superintends the creative energy, Prakriti. Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva does not worship Brahma, but he worships the Supreme Lord, who guides Brahma in his creative activities. There are two words used, Abhijna and Swarat. Abhi means specific, Jna means knowledge. Abhijna means specific knowledge the Lord has got. Like I told you, like we have general knowledge. If somebody asks you what is this, you may say hair. But how many hairs you have, that is specific knowledge which we don't have. But the Lord has that type of knowledge also, Abhijna, fully cognizant. And also, God means one who doesn't have to take knowledge from anyone. But living in it means we have to go to college to borrow knowledge. We don't have full knowledge. That's one thing that is very special for him. So he says, these two words distinguish the Supreme Lord from all other living entities. No other living entity is either Abhijna or Swarat. That is, no one is either fully cognizant or fully independent. Even Brahma has to meditate upon the Supreme Lord in order to create. Then what to speak of great scientists like Einstein? The brains of such a scientist are certainly not the products of any human being. Scientists cannot manufacture such a brain. And then what to speak of foolish atheists who defy the authority of the Lord? Even Mayavadi impersonalists who flatter themselves that they can become one with the Lord are neither Abhijna nor Swarat. And then he's saying such impersonalists undergo severe austerities to acquire knowledge to become one with the Lord, but ultimately they become dependent on some rich disciples who supply them with money to build monasteries. And then he goes on, and then he talks about Ravana, Hiranyakashipu and such people. They had to perform severe penance to, but they try to flout the authority of the Lord. So, a comparison is made here between the absolute truth Krishna in comparison with Brahma, in comparison with scientists, Einstein and all, then in comparison with Ravana and Hiranyakashipu and all these people. And Prabhupada compares these two and says that Lord is supremely independent in everything. He has complete knowledge of everyone and everything in this world. On the other hand, we are not independent in our knowledge. We are dependent in our knowledge. And also we are dependent for our resources in this world. So like that Prabhupada is making a comparison. And then below Prabhupada says, whenever men neglect the authority of the Lord, nature and her laws are there to penalize them. In the 11th canto, Chamasamuni, he tells a very important verse. He says, Mukabahuru Padevya Purushasya Shramaisaha Chatvaro Jagnirevarna Gunair Vipradaya Pratak Yayesham Purusham Sakshat Atma Prabhavamishwaram Nabajantya Bajananti Sthanat Brashtaha Patantyadaha. He says the four Varnas, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra and Brahmachari, Grastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, they all have come from the body of the Virat Purusha. Atma Prabhavam Ishwaram. Lord is the source of them. So because we have come from Him, we have to worship Him. Because He is the source of us. He has only created this. Like the Brahmacharis are created from the heart of the Lord. And the Vanaprasas are created from the chest of the Lord. The Grihasthas are created from the loins of the Lord. And the Sannyasis are created from the head of the Lord. Like that it is explained. Similarly, the Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra is also explained. Brahmanas from the head. Mukha Bahur Padebhya. Mukha means the face, Bahu means the shoulders, Uru means the thighs, and Pada means the leg. So they are all created from different parts of the body, and then it says, Na Bhajanti Abhajananti. Na Bhajanti means out of ignorance if somebody does not worship him, or somebody offends him. Abhajananti means to offend him. Then they Sthanat Brashtaha Patantya. They will fall down from their position. It is explained. So, that's why he says, the Janmadhyasyata means God is the source of everyone and everything. And if we don't worship Him, we become thieves. Because we take everything. As I told you, the three lists. Sunlight, moonlight, rainfall and breeze. And then the metals and sulfur and everything. And also rice, vegetables, fruits and cereals and all that. So we take these things from his creation and we use it without offering to him, then we become thieves. Then we fall from our position. Whatever, whenever man neglects the authority of the Lord, nature and her laws are there to penalize them or punish them, he says. Next page. And then next page you will find Prabhupada explaining how the Lord throws a glance on the nature and then he is creating all these things and everything. He impregnates the seeds and all. And then below he says a nice argument. An atheist may argue that God is no more expert than a watchmaker. But of course, God is greater because he can create machines in duplicate male and female forms. The male and female forms of different types of machineries go on producing innumerable similar machines without God's further attention. If a man could manufacture such a set of machines that could produce other machines without his attention, then he could approach the intelligence of God. But that's not possible, for each machine has to be handled individually. Therefore, no one can create as well as God. Another name for God is Asamavardhava. So you can give this wonderful example. You know, if people argue with you, you can say God's intelligence is so great that he created a man, he created a woman, and then generation after generation they are producing babies. And it is going on. But if man has to make, Microsoft makes one computer, then they can't make one she computer and he computer and which will multiply. They can't do that. But Krishna can do that. So if man can do what Krishna has done, then his intelligence is comparable with God, he's saying. But because man can't do that, God is called Asamavardhava. Nobody is equal to him or greater than him. And then below, last three lines of that paragraph, that Lord instructed Brahma, that Lord instructed Brahma in the Vedic knowledge, that Lord has to be obeyed in all respects. Anyone who wants to get rid of the material entanglement must surrender unto him. Unless one surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, it is certain that he will be bewildered. When an intelligent man surrenders unto the lotus feet of Krishna and knows completely that Krishna is the cause of all causes, then only he can be called a Mahatma. And then the next paragraph, Prabhupada is giving six reasons to prove how the Bhagavatam is authentic. Because I personally have read one of the books, Mayavadi books, before coming to ISKCON. For the Mayavadis, the greatest enemy or the dangerous book is Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Because the Mayavadis generally don't worry so much about the Puranas. Because the Puranas talk about Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu, their activities and everything. And they don't have much problem with the Puranas. They may just brush them aside as mythological and all that. But when it comes to Bhagavata Puran, it is compiled by the son of Vedavyas. Who is it? Shukadeva Goswami. He speaks it to Parikshit. And the Bhagavatam is having everything. There is, you know, karma, there is jnana, there is yoga, and culminating in bhakti. Everything is subset of bhakti. Like that the Bhagavatam explains. So when the Mayavadis first saw the Bhagavatam, like in one of the Mayavadi books, they say, how can this Shuka, this Shukadeva, who was a jnani, give up the jnana marga and go to bhakti yoga? He got bewildered. Like that they had written in one of the Mayavadi's books. Actually, Shukadeva Goswami was a self-satisfied Atmaram. Completely satisfied. He was, in fact, as soon as he was born, he went into the forest. But then there is a verse in the Bhagavatam you will find. Atmaramascha munayoho nirgrantha apyurukrame kuruvantyahaitukim bhaktim ittham bhuta gudon hari. Lord Hari or Lord Krishna's qualities are so great that even the jnanis who are nirgrantha, they have already severed all the ties of bondage from this world. And they may be living in the forest as Atmaram. Even they become captivated by the qualities of Krishna, it is said. Like Chatushkumaras became captivated by Lord's qualities. Shukadeva Goswami became captivated. Sarvam Bhattacharya became captivated by his qualities. So, sometimes Mayavadis, when they hear about some Mayavadi or impersonalist leaving the impersonalistic path and going to bhakti, they become envious. So that is one thing. Another thing is, some Mayavadis, they wanted to dehumanize the devotees by trying to propagate a wrong truth about Bhagavatam. What was that? They started telling people that somebody has written this Srimad Bhagavatam only very recently, in the 13th century or something. It's not a very ancient scripture. It is a very recent scripture. Like that they started propagating. Somebody called Vopadev has written this Bhagavatam. Like that they started propagating. And then amongst the Vaishnava community there was a big talk going on also, you know, what is this new thing they're coming up with. Regarding that, Prabhupada is giving 6 points to substantiate how Bhagavatam is not of recent origin, but Bhagavatam is a natural commentary for Vedanta Sutra written by Vedavyas. See, that paragraph Prabhupada is saying. So Mayavadi scholars argue that Srimad Bhagavatam was not compiled by Vedavyas. But some of them suggest that this book is a modern creation written by some Vopadev. In order to refute such meaningless arguments, Sridhar Swami points out that there is reference to Bhagavatam in many of the oldest Puranas. This first shloka of Bhagavatam begins with the Gayatri Mantra. And there is reference to this in the Matsya Purana. So this is the first proof. In Matsya Purana there is a reference to the Bhagavatam, saying that this is the Matsya Purana, which is the oldest Purana, and that talks about this. In that Purana it is said, with reference to Gayatri Mantra in the Bhagavatam, that there are many narrations of spiritual instructions beginning with the Gayatri Mantra. And there is a history of Vritrasura. Anyone who makes a gift of this great work on a full moon day attains to the highest perfection of life by returning to Godhead. There is reference to Bhagavatam in other Puranas also, where it is clearly stated that this work was finished in 12 cantos, which includes 18,000 shlokas. In the Padma Purana, also there is reference to the Bhagavatam in a conversation between Gautama and Maharaj Ambarisha. The king was advised therein to read regularly Srimad Bhagavatam if he desired liberation from mental bondage. And in these circumstances, there is no doubt about the authority of the Bhagavatam. Within the past 500 years, many erudite scholars and acharyas like Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Vallabhacharya, and many other distinguished scholars, even after the time of Lord Chaitanya, made elaborate commentaries on the Bhagavatam. And the serious student would do well to attempt to go through them to better relish the transcendental messages, he says. Which means Prabhupada wants us first to complete this Bhagavatam and then go to the commentaries of Goswamis, which is very exhaustive. In fact, Devakirandan Prabhu, when he comes to Pune, he speaks from those commentaries. Even Radha Govind Maharaj also speaks from those commentaries. And Vallabhacharya, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and all of them. So first we will try completing this Bhagavatam. And then, next paragraph, Prabhupada is talking about a very important point also. Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur specifically deals with the original and pure sex psychology, Adiras. So the previous paragraph which we read, if you want, you can give a label to it. You can call it authenticity of Bhagavatam. Because if some people challenge you, you can quote that. Isn't it? And the previous to that paragraph, one big paragraph which we had on that page, there also have given God's expertise greater than that of a watchmaker. God is not just a watchmaker. He has made a male machine, female machine. So God's expertise is much more than that of a watchmaker. Okay. So the next paragraph Prabhupada is saying, Vishnu Chakravarti deals with the original and pure sex psychology, devoid of all mundane inability. The whole material creation is moving under the principle of sex life. Wherever one turns his face, he sees sex life predominant. Therefore, sex life is not unreal. Its reality is experienced in the spiritual world. The material sex life is but a perverted reflection of the original fact. The original fact is in the absolute truth, and thus absolute truth cannot be impersonal. It is not possible to be impersonal and contain pure sex life. Consequently, the impersonalist philosophers have given indirect impetus to the abominable mundane sex life because they have overstressed the impersonality of the ultimate truth. Consequently, man without information of the actual spiritual form of sex has accepted perverted material sex life as the all in all. there is a distinction between sex life in the diseased mental condition and spiritual sex life. This requires some explanation. You see, generally the impersonalists, one time there was a Bhagavat Saptaha held somewhere. Prabhupada came to know about it, but he came to know that this Bhagavat Saptaha is held by Mayavadis. And Prabhupada went personally also to find out, and they had called a lot of people and they were giving a lecture, and they were trying to say that all this rasa dance, you know, Krishna dancing with the gopis and Krishna embracing gopis or, you know, kissing gopis, these kind of things are all unreal. These are not true. These are not part of Shastra. So they were trying to sort of give a moral explanation to Krishna's activities by denying these activities. So Prabhupada actually had come to know more, and Prabhupada wrote a very strong letter to them. First of all, don't even venture into Lord such pastimes, even before you study the other cantos of the Bhagavatam. Because you are impersonalist, you are trying to deny the Lord's different rasas. For example, we say Yashodamaya is taking Krishna on her lap, she is embracing him, she is kissing him, she is feeding him breast milk, and there is a Vatsalya Bhav there, isn't it? Similarly, you see the covered friends, they are playing with Krishna and doing different types of games and everything. Similarly, Krishna, as lovers of Krishna, the gopis of Vrindavan, the rasa dance, you will find in Krishna book also Krishna dancing with the gopis. Krishna, there are explanations of Krishna kissing the gopis or dancing with the gopis, embracing gopis, this kind of things. So these are very difficult for a mind that is tinged with desire for sense gratification to accept these truths. So this can bewilder us in the state of conditioned situation, conditioned state. So one has to come to a platform, like we say, Vishaya Chadiya Kabe, Shuddha Havayaman, Kabe Hamaheribo, Sri Vrindavan. So when we follow strict brahmacharya, whether it be a man or a woman, if one follows strict vow of celibacy for a prolonged period of time, then the propensity for enjoying mentality gradually dies off. At that point of time only one can understand that Krishna actually is reciprocating with every living being according to the way they reciprocate love with him. Yashodamaya wants to see Krishna as a child. So he is treating her like a mother. Somebody wants to treat Krishna as a friend, he is treating them as a friend. And the covered girls of Vrindavan, they all have performed so many millions of lifetimes of penances and austerities. Now they want Krishna to treat them as lovers. So Krishna dances with them, he jokes with them, plays with them. And these kind of activities are there in the spiritual world. And the acharyas have told us that we have to, if you go from the first kind of Bhagavatam, gradually we go, we will understand Krishna's spiritual body to be completely spiritual, and not even an iota of matter is there in his body. And Krishna also doesn't do these things like a boy may do with a girl, because Krishna's mind is completely pure. In fact, Lord sees every living being to be his part and parcel. It is said when Krishna was dancing with the gopis, it's like a child playing with its reflection in a mirror floor. Like that it is said. Because every living being is his part and parcel. Gopi is dancing like this, Krishna also is dancing. Gopi is doing like this, Krishna is also doing. You see that picture of rasa dance. He is just reciprocating with every one of them. So there is certainly this type of relation, but Prabhupada very clearly says that if somebody thinks that the kind of sexual relations that we find in this world is present in spiritual world, their mentality has to be reformed, Prabhupada writes. Because in the material world, the sex is done for exploiting the other person, with the desire to exploit the other person. This type of activities are not there. But certainly there is form of Lord, form for the living entities. Mayavad is even deny the form also. They say neither the Lord nor the living being has form. Everything is impersonal, only light. So Prabhupada says, because the Mayavadis have preached to the public that the spiritual world is only a big light, impersonal light, so people have lost interest to go there. And they have given undue importance for material sex life in this world. So, for example, all of you think about your own lives before you came to Krishna consciousness. You must be attracted to some cinema actor or actress. Correct? Why? Because we never knew about Radha and Krishna before. So we are attracted to some cinema actor, actress. So if you don't appreciate the spiritual divine couple and the whole spiritual world which is centered on pure love, there is no lust. Today we are talking on this topic also. Love is like gold, lust is like iron. So if you don't know that, then we think this is the ultimate truth. That's what Prabhupada is saying in this paragraph. The man without information of the actual spiritual form of sex has accepted perverted material sex life as all in all. The Srimad Bhagavatam will gradually elevate the unbiased reader to the highest perfectional stage of transcendence. It will enable him to transcend the three modes of material activities. So in this first verse which we read now, all the important things are Janma Desa Yataha means Krishna is the source of everything. He is the ultimate source of everything. Then Anvayad Itaratas means he has direct knowledge, indirect knowledge. Then Swarat means he is completely independent. He doesn't depend on anyone for money or anyone for help or suggestion or ideas or knowledge. He knows everything. He is completely independent. And then another point we learned was how Brahma, even Brahma or Durga Devi, even they don't have full knowledge. They are born in darkness. So Lord is the person who is Abhijna. He has full knowledge and his specific knowledge, yes. So everyone has to depend on him for knowledge. Asutama, Sadgame, Tamasama, Jyotirgame. And they have to depend on him for the knowledge. And another thing we learnt was about Satyam Param Dhimahi. The Gayatri Mantra is chanted to come to mode of goodness and then to elevate oneself to transcendence, and one shouldn't take Krishna's pastimes cheaply. The other two words was the word. Then the Tejavari Mridam is the material world and spiritual world. So those are the vital points in this first verse, which is a very important verse. So we dwelt on it fully. You see, man generally denies God. You will find in this world, people say, I don't believe in God, where is God? In Russia there was a big conference meeting. They were telling, God has been taking his post for a very long time. Let us give him retirement now, they said. Let us post somebody else in his place. This was actual meeting, serious meeting in Russia. At the end of the meeting, one scientist asked, okay, we can give retirement to God, but where can we get him? How to give him retirement? To give retirement also you have to catch him, no? And they didn't know how to catch him. That was the end of the meeting. They couldn't find further. So there are big meetings going on concocting about God like this in Western theology. They have so many. Some people say God doesn't exist. Some people say God created the world. It became too complex. He ran away. Like that. Many theories they come up with. So in order to defeat those wrong theories, what God does, he comes directly. He says, hey, you people are having conference about me. I am here now. And Krishna says, what is this? Matta parataram nanya. There is no truth superior to me. I am the ultimate truth. Aham sarvasya prabhu. Everything emanates from me only. Janmadhyasya yataha. I am the source of everything. And then when Krishna comes, they say, oh, how can this person be God? He is the son of Vasudev. How can you accept him as God? You see, when God doesn't come, they say either he doesn't exist or he is impersonal. And when he personally comes and shows himself, they say he is son of Vasudev. He is ordinary human being. We don't believe that he is God. Even Krishna is in confusion. He doesn't know what to do. If I don't come also, they deny me. If I come also, they don't accept me. What can I do? Problem. That is why Vedavyas, the very first verse is giving explanation of the absolute truth. Understand, if somebody asks you, what is the meaning of God? You should tell this whole verse. God is the one who is the source of everything. God is the one who has direct and indirect knowledge about each and everything. In nook and corner, he is in the heart of everyone as Antaryami, super soul. And he is completely independent. Prabhupada says, this Abhijna and Swarat can be used only for God, not even for Brahma, not even for Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Shiva, anybody else. He is supremely knowledgeable and completely independent. Nobody else is like that, he says. So this is a very good definition we can give to people. We'll say the next verse. Dharma projita kaitavatra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. Vedyam vastavamatra vastu shivadam tapatra yonmulanam.
श्रीमद् भागवते महामुनि कृते किं वा परैरीश्वरः। सद्यो हृद्यवरुद्यतेऽत्र कृतभिः शुश्रूषभिस्तत्क्षणात्।
Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Puran propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such a truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. So, His Grace Govind Prabhu and Radha Gopinath Prabhu are once telling me that when somebody is giving Bhagavatam class in Chowpatty, some devotees used to listen to the class sometimes in the bathroom, or sometimes in the ashram, or sometimes in the kitchen. So they used to say that that is not very attentive. But when you are sitting in the Bhagavatam class and hearing, and that is more attentive. Agree? Isn't it? Makes a difference. So similarly, Radha Gopinath Prabhu said he had a back pain. So he was sitting in the chair in the behind the class for that. So he said, by sitting in the chair because of the back pain, I saw that my attitude was changing when I was hearing Bhagavatam. He was telling. At that time, I am sitting down. He was telling. So those who are sitting in chair, you can sit comfortably. Don't worry. I just gave Radha Gopinath Prabhu's example. So he was telling how these two words are very important. As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam. Shushrushbhi. Kritubhi shushrushbhi stakshanat. Shushrushbhi by culture, that culture. So, that was a passing point, but this is a very, very important verse of Bhagavatam. You see, Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Parityajya, in the end of Bhagavad Gita. And here this verse says, Dharma Projita, Kaitavatya Paramo. Why this word Dharma Projita, it says, because in the material world, Prabhupada will explain in the purport we will read now, the material world means it's a place of competition and rivalry between animal and animal, man and man, family and family, one state and another state, country and country. There is envious competition. Competition for selfish gratification. That is material world. But the pure devotees, they give up this rat race because their goal is not in the material world, their goal is in the spiritual world. Because of which, they don't join the competition. Like for example, Prithu Maharaj's goal was to go back to Godhead. Indra's goal was to continue being Indra. So he got stuck up and Prithu Maharaj went back. Vritrasura's goal was to go back to Godhead. And Indra's goal was to remain King Indra. So Indra fought for his post and he remained here. And Vritrasura went back to Godhead. This is the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam teaches us, aim at the spiritual sky. Nothing short of that. Don't aim at anything else. So those who are aiming at the spiritual sky are called pure devotees. Those who want to simply love and serve Krishna and they don't have any material goals in this world, material ambitions in life for which they have to compete with other materialistic people. So such people are called pure devotees. So this first page of this purport is very important. In the subsequent pages we will read only some sections. So you can read the first page, purport by Srila Prabhupada. You can read, yeah. Purport. Okay, translation I already read. Can read purport.
Hare Krishna. Religion includes four primary subjects, namely pious activities, economic development, satisfaction of the senses, and finally, liberation from material bondage. Irreligious life is a barbarous condition. Indeed, human life begins when religion begins. Eating, sleeping, fearing and mating are the four principles of animal life. These are common both to animals and to human beings. But religion is the extra function of the human being. Without religion, human life is no better than animal life. Therefore, in human societies, there is some form of religion which aims at self-realization and which makes reference to man's eternal relationship with God.
Yeah, you will find, even if you go to the slum, like in Pune station, by the side of Pune station, there is in Chopadipatti. Even there you find a Gopuram. You will find. Everywhere, wherever there is a human society, even poorest of the poor people, they have some Gopuram, some temple, some Masoba, some Khandoba, some Vitoba, some temple they have. They are worshipping somebody, because worshipping some superior power is natural for human being. But you don't find, you know, where the society of dogs, they have a temple. You don't find that. That's what makes dharmena hina vashivit samana. That's what the first thing Prabhupada says. The first paragraph. Second paragraph. In the lowest stage of human civilization, there is always a competition to lord it over the material nature. In other words, continuous rivalry to satisfy the senses. Driven by such consciousness, man turns to religion. Why? Say, for example, I am competing with other people in the world. Why should I turn to religion? Can any of you say? To gain superiority over others. So I do dharma to get artha. I want to accumulate some wealth and enjoy life. So one may turn to God. Because the Shastra says, if you give charity, next life you will get 1,000 times back. If you give 1 rupee to a brahmana, you get 1,000 rupees back. So people may do that dharma to get something in return. Because people in Vedic life are very confident. They were not doubtful if I give somebody something, somebody, whether it will come back or not. They were sure it will come. So people do dharma to get artha. And after getting artha, what they would do? To enjoy kama. And they get frustrated with kama, they want moksha. So it's called four purusharthas. That's why man was turning to religion. He thus performs pious activities or religious functions to gain something material. But if such material gains are obtainable in other ways, then so-called religion is neglected. Is there any other ways by which you can get all the material gains? What is the alternative way instead of going to God to get material gains? Yeah, we can work hard and we can actually get facilities and comforts and luxuries through scientists. They are providing everything in life. Scientists are saying, whatever you get by going to God in the temple, we will provide you all those things. That's what he is saying. But if such material gains are obtainable in other ways, then so-called religion is neglected. This is the situation in modern civilization. Man is thriving economically. So at present, he is not very interested in religion. Churches, mosques, temples are now practically vacant. Men are more interested in factories, shops and cinemas than in religious places which were erected by their forefathers. This practically proves that religion is performed for some economic gains. That's the underlying vital point there. People are performing religion for economic gains. Which means, like, there are many people who do religion only for getting something. Like South Indians, many people come to Pune and go to Shirdi, Sai Baba. Do you think they have fallen in love with Sai Baba? There is no love involved there. It's only a pure business. You know, people go to Tirupati Balaji to do a business transaction with them. And I am setting up a business. For every 5 lakh, I will give you 1 lakh. They do business. Balaji also reciprocates with them. So people, which means people turn to religion for economic gains. And if the economic gains can come from somebody else, they don't mind accepting whoever it is. It can be Shirdi Sai Baba, it can be Vaishnavi Devi, you know, it can be Akalkot, it can be Puttaparthi, it can be Kalki, it can be Amma Appa, Bhagavan, whoever it is. Anybody they are ready to turn as long as economic gains will be available. That is so-called religion. Economic gains are needed for sense gratification, which is karma. Okay. The next paragraph you see, Prabhupada saying, in the Vedas, the above mentioned four activities are prescribed in the regulative way so that there will not be any undue competition for sense gratification. But Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all the sense gratificatory activities. It is purely transcendental literature which can be understood only by the pure devotees of the Lord who are transcendental to comparative sense gratification. In the material world, there is keen competition between animal and man, community, community, nation, nation, all that. But the devotees of the Lord rise above such competitions. They do not compete with the materialist because they are on the path back to Godhead, where life is eternal and blissful. Such transcendentalists are non-envious and pure in heart. See, this is the method of becoming non-envious. Why are we envious? If you have materialistic consciousness, we will have envy. If we rise above it, we will not have envy. If we make our goal spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, then we won't have envy. But anything short of that, we are going to have envy. Even up to the point of impersonal merging into Brahman. Even up to the point, we will have envy. In the material world, everyone is envious of everyone else. And therefore, there is competition. But the transcendental devotees of the Lord are not only free from material envy, but they are well-wishers to everyone. And they strive to establish a competition-less society with God in the center. That means spiritual world is a competition-less society with Krishna in the center. In spiritual world, you never find a tiger eating a deer or something. In spiritual world, a tiger and deer will drink water together in the river. They have, because there is no jiva-jiva-jivanam principle in spiritual world. It's only in the material world. In spiritual world, there is no competition at all. In fact, there is a competition to see putting others first and oneself behind. Everyone, like Radharani, if she puts other gopis in front of Krishna for service, she feels 10 million times more happy. And if gopis see Radha and Krishna and the Julan, and they are dancing for their pleasure, they feel 10 million times more happy. There is no competition in spiritual world. But so the pure devotees are also trying to make this world like that world. So they tell all people, hey, give up all your quarrel. You know, you are fighting, like sometimes, you know, they say Ramu and Somu, they were fighting, they were brothers. And this fellow said, my land is up to this. That fellow said, my land is up to this. He cut his hand, that fellow cut his leg. This kind of fight. Why are you fighting? You both are going to be dead and gone. Your body will turn into a pile of ashes. And you will be getting another body, body after body. So don't fight for land, don't fight for gold, don't fight for oil, don't fight for all these things. So the pure devotees aim at the spiritual world. The contemporary socialist conception of a competitionless society is artificial, because in the socialist state there is a competition for the post of dictator. You know the czars, you know, you'll find the communist people, when they said we will divide and equally make all people enjoy, the people who took up the leading post, they became cheaters. They became corrupt. You know the story of that monkey who got two cats, you know, who came to him with a big loaf of bread. Both the cats said, sir, please cut it equally and give us in a taraju, you know, in a balance. So he cut one big and another one small, he kept it. And then he took a portion of it and he ate it. And then it became too small, it went like this. In this little he kept on eating, finally the whole bread was over. And both the cats went in an empty stomach back. Like that, communist dictators and leaders, what they did, they said, we will take the public property and divide equally, and they enjoyed very nicely. That's what the Prabhupada is saying. So the whole thing is, material life is centered on sense gratification, he says. You can come below in the next paragraph, somewhere in the middle. In the karma kanda, there is competition to reach heavenly planets for better sense gratification. And there is similar competition in jnana kanda and the upasana kanda also. The Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all of these because it aims at the supreme truth, which is the substance or the root of all categories. From Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance as well as the categories. The substance is the absolute truth, the supreme Lord. And all emanations are relative forms of energy. See, Krishna is called as Vastava Vastu. And all other objects of this world are called as Avastava Vastu. For example, a man is attracted to a woman is attracted to man. Because of which, sometimes there is envy and rivalry also. For example, there is a competition between two men to want to marry the same one woman. You find like that sometimes. Why? Because both of them consider that body of the woman to be absolute truth for them. But it is not absolute truth, it is avastava vastu. Why? It is temporary and perishable, it is relative, and it leads to duality, all the three. It's temporary and perishable, you know it. It's relative means the beauty is relative to Krishna's beauty. So this beauty is a changing beauty also. And duality means in this world every object you get, it has two things. Sukha and Dukkha. Like you get a car, you can enjoy having your own car. But the problem is you have to maintain the car. Isn't it? Like that, everything. Like if somebody wants a beautiful woman as a wife, yes, you may think you can enjoy, but you have fear that, you know, somebody else should not, you know, kidnap her, somebody else should not do anything to her. You have the fear also. So this world is the world of duality also. So, avastava vastu means all the material objects of this world which are glittering. What is that word? What is that slogan? All that glitters is not gold. Maya's glamour is for fools. It is said. So Maya is glittering with so many types of illusory objects which are all called as avastava vastus in this world. So when our mind can rise above these objects and look at Krishna who is the vastava vastu, then we will come to the platform of pure devotion. Now, I am telling it so lightly, but each of us have to find out what are the avastava vastus in my heart, which are clinging to my heart and not leaving me. It can be many things of this world. If you read the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, he talks about attraction for a big marble bungalow a man wants to make. And that is like a Gandharvapur, which is a formation of cloud in the sky, which stays for a while and gets dissipated. Similarly, attraction for gold is called as attraction for a yellow stool. Like that, there are explanations given in Bhagavatam. Attraction for these material objects, especially collecting money, gold, silver, and having facilities and furnitures and amenities, affluent facilities, and attraction for the opposite sex. These are all actually avastava vastus which make us feel that they are vastava, they are permanent. That's why he uses the word Vedyam Vastava Matra Vastu Shivadam Tapatrayan Mulana. So if our mind gets fixed in Krishna's truth by hearing from the spiritual master, that actually what is spiritual master trying to do? Again and again, lecture after lecture, he is trying to convince us that Krishna is the only truth. All other truths are perishable. And we may nod the head also. Yes, very correct, very correct. But still we don't leave this avastava vastus of this world. And then after probably the entire life goes off, at the end of the life, Tyaga Chantiranantaram. We give up. Like a child is born like this, grabbing everything. And while leaving the body, they leave the hand like this. Then one leaves. But sometimes in the next lifetime they may capture again. Once more. Millions of lifetimes again and again. Like that he is saying. So karma kanda, jnana kanda, share a banda. He says. Similarly, what is that another verse? What is that? Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta. Krishna bhakti nishkama atyeva shanta. He says. And then Prabhupada next paragraph is detailing about the threefold miseries and all. See the next paragraph from the bottom, maybe sixth or seventh line. In the material conception, one falsely thinks himself the lord of all he surveys, and therefore he is always troubled by the threefold miseries of life. But as soon as one comes to know his real position as transcendental servant, he at once becomes free from all miseries. See, this is a very, very important sentence. This is a great secret that was revealed to me in Prabhupada's books. Although I went to many organizations, nobody told me this truth. You see, Vivekananda or any other organization, generally, the kind of feeling you get by reading those books is that you are the master. You are a jnani, you do meditation. And most people keep the picture of that Swami because he looks very majestic. So, oftentimes people in spiritual life are given that kind of feeling. But the fact is that the living entity is not master, the living entity is servant. If we deny this fact, what is given here, then we have to become servant of Maya. If we deny to become servant of Krishna, we have to become servant of Maya. We can see that we all in this world, we become servant of our impure mind and impure senses. There is a beautiful verse which says, Bhavodbhava klesha shatahatahata indriya paribrahmana kapantantare niyambyatam madhavame manohyaha twadam krishankau drida bhakti bandane. Oh my dear Lord Krishna, he is saying, Bhava udbhava klesha. Bhava means bhavasagar. From the samsara sagar, so much pains are arising for me in this world. Why? Because when my mind is running in the road of my senses, he's saying, when my mind is running in the road of my senses to enjoy the sense objects, I am being repeatedly whipped from behind. Pew, pew, pew. like that. Constantly I am being bibbed by threefold miseries. It's a very esoteric verse. Huh? He says, when my mind is chasing after the, when the horse of my mind is running in the direction of the road of the senses, I am being repeatedly whipped several times by the threefold miseries. Please kindly pick up this horse, which is really maddened horse, and you take the horse of rope of the horse and tie it in your lotus feet, and please don't let me go, let my mind go away anywhere. Let my horse of my mind stay in your lotus feet, and that is how I will be sheltered and I will be safe and protected, he is saying. So one time a boy came to me and told me, Prabhuji, please keep a watch on me because I have a tendency to very quickly fall down. He was telling, I said, hey, hundreds of boys have come for the camp, how can I keep a watch on you always? He said, no, Prabhuji, you know, every 5 minutes you make sure that I am sitting in the camp, I don't go away. So I said, hey, you should have some self-confidence that you will survive also. You know, you can't depend on me totally. But then, later on, I told him, you be under the care of one senior devotee and all. But here in this particular poem, which I told you in our song, the devotee is praying to Lord that I don't trust my own mind and senses. They are rascals. That is why I am praying to you, you catch my mind and tie it on your Padankrishanko Drida Bhakti Bandhane. Tie me to your lotus feet so I will not fall down. Keep me. Which means, you know, take away my free will. You keep it with you and engage it in your service. Like that he is praying. So, in this way, many times we find in this world, one becomes a servant of a dog. Like Prabhupada said, carrying a tin behind the dog for catching the stool of the dog. In America, Prabhupada said. Or one becomes a servant of his relatives and friends. Although, like a man claims to be master in a home, he becomes servant of his wife. Wife claims to be queen of the home, she becomes servant of the child who is very naughty and mischievous and adamant. You know. So in this way, everyone becomes servant of somebody in this world. And then Prabhupada says, if we refuse to become servant of Krishna, we have to be servant of somebody else in this world, or servant of our impure mind and senses, or the servant of the taskmaster, which is lust. This lust, pride, greed, envy, anger and illusion. So it is better to give up our servitorship to these bogus masters and become a servant of Krishna. There is another verse also where he calls lust as a taskmaster. He is saying, what is that verse? Similar verse, like this verse I told you, there is another verse also in which he says, na tripa, na karuna, na upashanti. Like that in one verse he says, in that verse he says, my dear Lord, this lust is such a rascal taskmaster. For millions of lifetimes, this lust demanded me to serve. And I have been serving faithfully, loyally. But there is no tripti on the part of lust. There is no shanti. There is no karuna also. Mercilessly, the lust is demanding me more and more. Now I have become determined. I have said no to Mr. Lust. And now I am coming to your lotus feet. Don't let me go. Let me stay at your feet. Like that there is a prayer also. So, we are accepting servitorship of Krishna, not that we have become magnanimous souls. If you don't accept Krishna's lotus feet, we are going to be ripped and kicked and pounded and punched and submerged underground by this lust, pride, greed, envy, anger, illusion and all these things. So, we have to take shelter of Krishna. We become great by taking shelter of the greatest. Like the crab, you know. When the crab came out of the ocean, Prabhupada told Brahmanand Prabhu, catch it. And Brahmanand Prabhu, you know, jumped up and immediately the crab went under the water. And he couldn't catch it. Prabhupada laughed and said, just see, you have such a big body, you couldn't catch such a small crab. Prabhupada said, Brahmanand Prabhu became little, you know, offended. He said, Prabhupada, I will catch it second time. Again the crab came out, again tried to catch, again it went under water. And Prabhupada said, do you know why you can't catch him? And he said, why Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, because he has taken shelter of the greatest. You can't catch him. Krishna is the greatest. You take shelter of him, you will become great. And you will be safe. So, that's why he is saying, if we take shelter of Krishna, we will become free from shoka, moha, bhaya also. Lamentation, illusion and fear. And the threefold miseries also. See, over and above this, Srimad Bhagavatam is a personal commentation of Vedanta Sutra by Vedavyas. It is written in the maturity of his spiritual life through the mercy of Narada. And Vedavyasa is an authorized literary incarnation of Narayana. Therefore, there is no question as to his authority. There are three things that are very important here, given here about Vedavyas. One thing is said, it is his personal commentary to Vedanta. See, Vedanta is all aphorisms, raso vai saha, rasam hi evayam, labdvanandi bhavati, and such kind of quotes. Here he is expanding on that with pastimes. And then it is written in his maturity in spiritual life. Why maturity? Because he got advice from his guru Narada, who told him to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, exclusively. And Vedavyas did it. That is why it was written in his maturity after completing all other scriptures. And Vedavyas is also Narayana's incarnation, literal incarnation. So these three should be remembered also. Because they go to talk about the authenticity of Bhagavatam and the greatness of Bhagavatam. And below you can see next para. The proper method for receiving this transcendental message is to hear it submissively. A challenging attitude cannot help one realize this transcendental message. This word is called shushrushu. And one must be anxious to hear this transcendental message. The desire to sincerely hear is the first qualification for Bhagavatam. You know, there was one sannyasi in ISKCON. His name is Gunagrahi Maharaj. I think he's Prabhupada's disciple. He had taken sannyas outside ISKCON, from probably Gaudiya Mata or something. So he came to Mayapur, and he was staying in Mayapur. But he wanted to serve in ISKCON. That was his desire. So many ISKCON leaders were a little confused whether he could be allowed and all. So they said, we'll watch you for some time and all. Then we will decide after 2-3 years or whatever. So at that time he was undergoing the Bhakti Shastri course in Mayapur. He was attending the Bhakti Shastri classes for 3 months. So the Bhakti Shastri teacher Atul Krishnapu observed, all those 3 months, every single day, he found him attending Srimad Bhagavatam class in the morning, between 8 to 9, or 8 to 9, 9:15, and 10 o'clock the Bhakti Shastri class would start. The Bhakti Shastri class would be like 10 to 4 or 10 to 5 in the evening. So somebody can always say, Prabhuji, I'm attending 10 to morning, 10 to evening 5, I'm here doing so much hearing, why to go for the morning Bhagavatam class? He didn't say that. 3 months, every single day he was sitting in the front, you know, very attentively hearing Bhagavatam and bringing his Bhagavatam and everything. So when he told this to the GBC, GBCs were so pleased hearing this. After 3 months, they took him for a project and they posted him as in charge of a project. But GBC gave the reason. They said, because you have so much eagerness to hear Bhagavatam, we are very confident that you will be stable in your spiritual life. So this is a symptom of a devotee. A devotee should have, see, for example, sometimes like our brahmacharis and other devotees, they used to come late. 8:25 class means 8:35, 8:40. Then later on we made the attendance. And then we told the devotees, now you have to fill up attendance. Everyone comes running now. See, that is forced confirmation. Forced conformity. Forced conformity means, if you don't give attendance, I have to write Mahamantra or something. You know? But there should be a natural taste that I want to sit down and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the first qualification for hearing Bhagavatam, he's saying, for advancing in spiritual life. Anxiousness to hear and a submissive attitude to hear. Unfortunate people find enough time to hear idle social and political conversations. But when invited to attend a meeting of devotees to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they suddenly become reluctant. You have seen these people, no? Many people, you tell them there is a weekly program, can you come, can you attend? Immediately they say, oh, I have this busy schedule, that thing, this thing. But then they have time for reading newspaper, they have time for TV and everything. And then Prabhupada also says, Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be heard from the beginning. He says that, yeah. So the second verse is very important verse because it distinguishes the paro dharma and the other dharmas. It clearly, it's like a sun versus stars or moon versus stars. All other dharmas are, you know, Matru Deva Bhava, Pitru Deva Bhava, that is like one star. You know, Aditi Deva Bhava or patriotism, Desha Bhakti. So Bhagavatam elevates one from all this, you know, Matru Prem, Pitru Prem, Aditi Prem, Desh Prem to Krishna Prem. It elevates the person. Krishna Prem is like a full moon. Krishna Chandra. That is the main aspect of this verse. So we'll recite the third verse.
Nigamakalpatarorgalitam phalam Shukamukhadam vritadravasam yutam పిబత భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహో రసికా భువి భావుకాః.
ఓ ఎక్స్పర్ట్ అండ్ థాట్ఫుల్ మ్యాన్ రిలీజ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం, ద మెచ్యూర్ ఫ్రూట్ ఆఫ్ ద డిజైర్ ట్రీ ఆఫ్ వేదిక్ లిటరేచర్స్. ఇట్ ఎమినేటెడ్ ఫ్రమ్ ద లిప్స్ ఆఫ్ శ్రీ సుఖదేవ గోస్వామి. దేర్ఫోర్ దిస్ ఫ్రూట్ హ్యాస్ బికమ్ ఈవన్ మోర్ టేస్ట్ఫుల్. ఆల్దో ఇట్స్ నెక్టేరియన్ జ్యూస్ వాస్ ఆల్రెడీ రిలీజబుల్ ఫర్ ఆల్ ఇంక్లూడింగ్ లిబరేటెడ్ సోల్స్. See, the purport proper is saying here, second line, Srimad Bhagavatam is sublime literature. It surpasses all other Vedic scriptures. It's transcendental to all mundane activities and mundane knowledge. What is mundane activity, mundane knowledge? For example, mundane knowledge means physics, chemistry, biology, geography, history, mundane knowledge. You know, studying engineering, medicine, chartered accountancy and all these things. Mundane knowledge, mundane. And what is mundane activity? You know, watching movie, playing chess, you know? All the worldly activities which have no connection to God. In fact, we can go from this point, then gradually we can go to performing yajna, dana, tapa for demigods. They are also actually mundane. Although they are religious, they are not transcendental. They are also mundane. You know, people do some yajna for getting putra bhagya, dhana bhagya, lakshmi bhagya and all these things. They do satyanarayan puja for getting some wealth and everything. So any activity done with a material goal in mind is mundane. Material goal. Huh? But Bhagavatam is transcendental to all that. But it is the ripened fruit of all Vedic literatures. It's the cream of all Vedic knowledge. Considering all this, patient and submissive hearing is definitely essential. With great respect and attention, one should receive the message and lessons imparted by Srimad Bhagavatam. The Vedas are compared to desire tree because they contain all things knowable by man. They deal with mundane necessities as well as spiritual realization. So Vedas have two sections. Some are mundane, some are transcendental. Like here he says, they contain regulated principles of knowledge covering social, political, religious, economic, military, medicinal, chemical, physical, metaphysical subject matter. And all that may be necessary to keep the body and soul together. So the Vedas contain all these things. And beyond this, they have spiritual knowledge. So, the Bhagavatam, see, the whole Vedic knowledge is compared to a tree, like a big tree. In that tree there are many leaves, there are branches, there are so many sections of knowledge in the Vedas, different divisions, they are all like different branches. And amongst them, the fruit which is like a kaccha mango is like Vedanta or Upanishads, the Shrutis. They are like kaccha mango, they are bitter because Upanishads are very dry. They describe the absolute truth in very mystical ways. They are not describing very clearly, straightforward. And the Bhagavatam is like a ripe mango. Like you all like amras, isn't it? So it's like amra ras, Bhagavatam. Pibata Bhagavatam rasamalayam, he's saying. So all of you took khichdi when you came, all of you? Anybody has not taken? Raise your hands. There are some hands up, oh really? Premanapu, these devotees haven't taken. You reserve. Yeah. And reserve and keep before it, they finish it. Actually, our devotee said our khichdi is ecstatic. Even Brahmachari eat only khichdi nowadays in the evening. You all took it? It's very delicious, very nice. Yes. It's austerity for hearing Bhagavatam. You reserve more than these people in case anybody else needs anything. Yeah. See the next page, Prabhupada is saying, after giving all the rasas, he is saying, the sum total of all these rasas is called affection or love. Primarily, such signs of love are manifested in adoration, service, friendship, paternal affection, conjugal love, and other things he is mentioning. And then he is saying, sometimes love affairs between two persons culminate in ghastly murder scenes. Such rasas are displayed in man and woman, man and man, animal and animal. But here Prabhupada comes to a very important point. There is no possibility of an exchange or rasa between a man and an animal or between a man and any other species of living beings within the material world. Somebody may say, sometimes a man loves a dog. How can you say there cannot be exchange of love between man and animal? But actually, many times if a man is taming a dog or taming a pussycat or something like that, maybe he has one dog or one cat to whom he may give some biscuits and he may bathe the dog. And he may maintain at home. Because the master maintains him, the dog is loyal to him. But what Prabhupada is talking here is attraction of all the species towards Krishna. The peacocks are attracted to him, the deers are attracted to him, the monkeys are attracted to him, hundreds and thousands and millions of cows are attracted to him. Have you ever seen hundreds of cows running towards a covered boy, like any ordinary covered boy? You cannot see animals and birds and insects and everyone attracted to Krishna. Somebody asked Prabhupada, are there mosquitoes in spiritual world? Prabhupada said, if there are, they all are chanting Hare Krishna, Prabhupada said. Prabhupada had quick answers for everything. So even all the species are chanting Hare Krishna and they are remembering Krishna in their hearts. And their hearts and souls, they are remembering him. And then Prabhupada is saying, the rasas are exchanged between members of the same species. But as far as the spirits also are concerned, they are one qualitatively with the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the rasas were originally exchanged between Supreme Living Being and Spiritual Whole. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is therefore described in the Shruti Mantras as the fountainhead of all the rasas. Now see the next page. Therefore, one who attains full knowledge of these different rasas, which are basic principles of activities, can understand the false representations of the original rasas which are reflected in the material world. The learned scholar seeks to relish the real rasa in the spiritual form. You see, the spiritual world is full of Krishna rasa. So if somebody develops attachment to Krishna's beauty, Krishna's rupa, naam, guna, leela, ityadi, all these things, then they can give up the attraction and attachment for the things of this world. That's how it is possible. That's original rasa and this is perverted reflection, as said earlier also. So that's why he's saying, pibata bhagavatam rasam. If you read bhagavatam, gradually you will forget the mundane, perishable rasas of this material world. And you will understand the real rasa. So the material world is like a bamboo and spiritual world is like sugar cane. Like Prabhupada gives this example. Both look alike. There is bamboo beauty, there is sugarcane beauty. So bamboo also looks sometimes very polished and like looking very beautiful, but you bite it, you will only break your teeth. So the material pleasures, one class Radhana Swami Maharaj was telling, before marriage you think, your spouse is like gulab jamun, he said, and after marriage you think it's like Karela juice. He was telling in one class. So then Maharaj asked, why do you feel so? Then he was telling, the reason is we are trying to extract happiness on a material platform. Then you feel like that. But if you see, if husband and wife, they see each other like spiritual partners, spiritual friends. That is why between couple, there should be divine couple, Maharaj used to say. If divine couple is between couple, then they will always find them like gulab jamun till their death. And beyond death also. Because the spiritual relationships are always very sweet. And they are very deeply, they enter our mind, enter our heart. But the material relationships, they start stinking within a very short time. We get fed up from a material outlook. See, go to the page down below, last line. In Sanskrit, the parrot is also known as Shuka. When a ripened fruit is cut by the red beaks of such birds, its sweet flavor is enhanced. The Vedic fruit, which is mature and ripe in knowledge, is spoken through the lips of Sri Sukadeva Goswami, who is compared to the parrot, not for his ability to recite the Bhagavatam exactly as he heard him from his father, learned father, but for his ability to present the work in a manner that would appeal to all classes of men. Very important point. He says, Sukadeva Goswami is called as a parrot, not because he is doing parroting. You know what is parroting? Parroting means exactly you hear it and you repeat it. Not for that reason. Why is he called as a parrot? Because a parrot, using his beak, he sweetens the fruit by pecking that, that fruit, tondli fruit, Parrot eats a tondli fruit. So when it touches a tondli fruit, that fruit becomes ripe. Not the fruit, the green tondli becomes red tondli. By the touch of the parrot, the chonch of the parrot, beak of the parrot. Like that, Sukadeva Goswami heard the Bhagavatam from his father, and then when he spoke, his father, who is his guru, who gave him knowledge, he was also sitting and hearing. So which goes to show that Sukadeva was very highly qualified. that even very, very great sages and saints like even Vedavyas, Narada, they were sitting and hearing when he was speaking. Very highly qualified. That's why he's saying that. Also, Shuka is a parrot in the spiritual world. He's Radharani's parrot. You can imagine, Radharani is carrying Shuka parrot in her hands and she is giving him personal instructions. In spiritual world, go here, go there, find out what Krishna is doing. So we can imagine how much he must be knowing the confidential mellows between Radha and Krishna and Radharani and her sakis. Who can be a better candidate to speak Bhagavatam than Shukadeva Goswami, who knows the intimate leelas of the Lord? Nikunja Yuno Ratikeli Siddhyai Yayali Bir Yuktirapekshaniya. He's doing that. That's why he is very qualified. And then, from fourth verse onwards, we will skip this fourth verse. Just the translation we will read. Once in a holy place in the forest of Naimisharanya, great sages headed by the sage Shaunaka assembled to perform a great 1,000-year sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. And the next verse. One day, after finishing their morning duties by burning sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Suta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. In that purport, see the first line. Morning is the best time to hold spiritual services. Prabhupada is saying. And then below he is saying, Sri Vyasadeva impregnated the message of Bhagavatam unto Srila Shukadeva Goswami, and Sri Suta Goswami heard it from him. That is from Shukadeva Goswami. All bona fide representatives of Sri Vyasadeva in the chain of disciplic succession are to be understood to be Goswamis. These Goswamis restrain all their senses and they stick to the path made by the previous acharyas. The Goswamis do not deliver lecture on Bhagavatam capriciously. Rather, they execute the services most carefully, following their predecessors who delivered the spiritual message unbroken to them. Those who listen to Bhagavatam may put questions to the speaker in order to elicit the clear meaning, but they should not be done in a mood of challenging spirit. One must submit questions with a great regard for the speaker and the subject matter. One must learn transcendental subject by submissive oral reception from the right sources. So two things are important when you are hearing Bhagavatam. We should hear with a submissive spirit and we should hear from the right source in parampara. These two things he is saying. This is the highlight. Now I would request all of you to silently read for about 3 minutes. Text number 6, 7, 8, 9, okay, up to 8. 6, 7, 8, 3 verses you can read yourself silently, quickly, both the purport and the translation you can read. After 3 minutes I will ask you, what are the qualifications mentioned for a speaker of Bhagavatam? That question you will answer after reading for about 3 minutes. So, in the verse number 5, we were telling you, how should one receive the speaker? So the Shaunakadi Rishis, they gave an elevated seat to Suta Goswami and they sat and heard Bhagavatam from him with great respect and submissiveness without a challenging spirit, and all that is said. So, I also heard recently some interesting points about Bhagavatam. Hearing Bhagavatam, actually, unless the speaker of Bhagavatam knows the audience to whom he is speaking, and unless the audience have a genuine love and respect for the speaker, there cannot be proper transmission of knowledge and shraddha and bhakti towards the audience. Like that I heard. The example Prabhupada gives, for example, a potent husband and a fertile wife. That example Prabhupada gives. So the husband is potent and the wife is fertile, then there will be a birth of a child in the womb of the lady. This is one example Prabhupada gives. Or like sowing a seed on a land. If the land is barren, then you can't produce any crops. Land has to be fertile. In the same manner, there are qualifications for the speaker of Bhagavatam, there is qualification for the hearer of Bhagavatam. So in the previous verse, text number 5 we heard, text number 4 and 5, yeah. So the sages, Shaunakadi Rishis, they are the audience. So naturally, they had respect, great respect for Suta Goswami. And then you will find how they have great respect for Suta Goswami because they are praising him in various ways, in the subsequent verses. which also gives us a understanding of what is the qualification of the speaker of Bhagavatam. Now let us hear from all of you quickly. You can tell different qualifications. Let us go in the same order is given in the translation purport will go. What is the first one? Yeah? Completely free from all vice. That's the first one, yeah. Then? Well versed in all scriptures. That's the second one. All scriptures means the Puranas and Mahabharata, Ramayana, like the purpose is, all of them. See, the purpose is the Puranas, the Vedas, Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana, all these things, yeah. See, especially the translation, the verse says, Akhyatani Adhitani, Akhyatani Api Adhitani, Dharma Shastrani Yanyuta. See, Akhyatani means explain, Adhitani means well read. So it is not enough that one has studied the scriptures silently on one's own, but they should have explained it to others also. And you see the purport saying, to hear and explain them is more important than reading them. One can assimilate the knowledge of the revealed scriptures only by hearing and explaining. I have one boy in IIT Kadakpur, one devotee, one Gupta. What Gupta is he? Ashish Gupta. So he goes to, you know, NIT Jamshedpur. He was going to Raurkela also. What he would do, evening when the boys are taking prasadam, he had heard Rajanath Swami Maharaj's Ramayana lectures, some 30 lectures. Every evening he was telling them the essence of one lecture. And the boys were, while eating prasadam, the boys enjoyed it so much, these pastimes. And every day the boys would come running for prasadam at 7. To sit with him, he will make a big circle, he will tell these pastimes to them. Now he has become such an expert. So he himself delights in it. He says, Prabhuji, I have become more Krishna conscious by telling others. That's why he says, Akhyatani Api Adhitani. We have to explain, Prabhupada says. Hearing is called Shravan and explaining is called Kirtan, Prabhupada is saying. The two processes are of primary importance, he says. Okay? So these two are important. And also, what is the next qualification given? The next verse, yeah? Yeah? He is saying, you are acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasadeva. Okay. But you are fully versed in all kinds of physical and metaphysical knowledge, he says. See, there are six systems of philosophy, which is given in the purport. You see, Prabhupada says, Gautama, Kanada, Kapila, Patanjali, Jaimini and Ashtavakra. We have a book in ISKCON called the Six Systems of Philosophy. Basically, these philosophies, all of them... You will find each of them, like Karma Mimamsa, you will find that Prabhupada says here and there in his purports. Little he says that. But these are also available in a detailed book. And Prabhupada says below, one can sit on the Vyasasana only after being conversant in all systems of philosophy, so that one can present fully the theistic views of the Bhagavatam in defiance of all other systems, he says. Which means, that is why Prabhupada gives the essence of the six philosophies in his purports. You will read that in some of his purports. Why we should know these philosophies? Because some of them are atheistic. Then we should know what the atheistic people say against God. So we can know that and we can defeat them. For that we have to know. The six systems of philosophy, he says. Which means you have to be knowledgeable in vidyamcha, avidyamcha, as we say. We should not only know the transcendental knowledge. Like Prabhupada, when he went to the West, many people... You know, who came to him were having varieties of issues and questions which were related to the modern day world. Like Prabhupada spoke about abortion, he spoke about cow slaughter, he spoke about man-woman premixing and all these things. And he gave, actually he could give the Shastra in light of the modern world. That is very important. Then what is another qualification he says? And because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all the favors bestowed upon a gentle disciple. Therefore, he can tell us all that you have scientifically learned from them. See, the purport saying, the secret of success in spiritual life is in satisfying the spiritual master and thereby getting his sincere blessings. You see, knowing all answers to questions is not a sufficient qualification for being a speaker of Bhagavatam. If somebody says, oh, he is so learned, you ask from Ashtavakra Samhita, he will give answers. You ask from Kena Upanishad, he can give answers. That is not the qualification. Even if one is well read, even Romaharshana Sutta was so well read in all the sections of Vedas from Veda Vyas, But Balramji took a small grass, touched him and finished him. Because he didn't consider that the qualification. So, one should have obtained the sincere blessings of the spiritual master, he says. And then below he is saying, it is essential therefore that a disciple be very much obedient and submissive to the bona fide spiritual master. And then he says below, last line, the sages of Naimisharanya were confident that she, Suta Goswami, was bona fide. Therefore they were anxious to hear from him. Like that it is said. So, we have to study about both, the role of a disciple, the role of a spiritual master, and the role of the speaker of Bhagavatam also. So there are many examples in the scriptures of someone who lost the mercy of spiritual master. Can you give an example? Who suddenly lost the mercy? Yeah? Indra, when he offended Brihaspati, lost, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah? Ramachandra Puri, who lost the mercy, and Ishwara Puri, who obtained the mercy by pleasing his spiritual master. Isn't it? So by studying these things we come to understand. And Bhagavatam was formed by Shukadeva Goswami to Parikshit. Similarly, Suta Goswami to Shaunakadrishi. So, in this first chapter that we are discussing today, verse number 1 to 3, what we discussed, that is discussing about the subject, glories and the goal of Srimad Bhagavatam. Verses 1 to 3. The subject, the glories and the goal. First verse talks about subject. And then second verse talks about Bhagavatam's glories. It says, you know, Kimba Parayishwara. When Bhagavatam is there, what is the need of any other book? There is nothing equal to Bhagavatam. It glories, talks of glories of Bhagavatam. And it also talks about the goal of Bhagavatam. It is meant for the pure devotees and Nirmatsaranam and all that. And the third verse also, Muharaho, Rasika, Vibhavuka, that talks the glories of Bhagavatam. 1, 2, and 3. And verses 4 to 8, there is a description about the beginning of the sacrifice in Naimisharanya and welcoming Suta Goswami to take the Vyasas, and all that is explained. And most importantly, verses 4 to 8 talk about the qualifications of a speaker and a hearer of Bhagavatam. Qualifications of speaker and hearer of Srimad Bhagavatam. And verse number 9 to 23, you all have to do this as a homework. You can read it yourself. It's very easy. It's simply 6 questions that the Shaunakadi Rishi is asked to Suta Goswami. We will quickly scan through that so that it will be easy for you when you go back. See verse number 9, you see, that's a question 1. There are 6 questions asked by the sages. That is why, what is the title of this chapter, you see? What is the title? Yeah, questions by the sages. 6 questions they are asking. With that the chapter is ending. So now the sages were saying that, you know, we have performed this yajna for so long and our faces have become blackish. And we didn't gain anything by performing this Karmakanda sacrifice. So you please teach us Bhagavatam. Then he began speaking Bhagavatam, Suta Goswami. But they are asking these 6 questions. First question is in Shloka 9. They are asking about how to bring about the absolute and ultimate good, Shreyas, for all the people. Please repeat after me. Tatra tatranj. Tatra tatra anjasa yushman bhavata yad vinishchitam pumsam ekam tata shreyas tannasham situmarhasi. Please, therefore, being blessed with many years, explain to us in an easily understandable way what you have ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general. And the purport, see one line, Prabhupada is saying, spiritual well-being is automatically followed by material well-being, third line. The answer to this question will come in 1.2.6. You will get the answer there. It will come later in the second chapter. And then they are talking about in the verse number 10, they are talking about the, you know, disqualifications of the people in the age of Kali Yuga. It's very important, that section, that verse. You should do it as a homework. He is explaining every word. Alpayusha, Manda, Sumanda Mataya, Manda Bhagya. Everything is very beautifully explained. If you read this one purport, you can give one full class anywhere you go. To anybody you want to speak, This whole purport you read, you can remember, and it is very good to preach to even new people. Prabhupada is explaining the situation of modern day world. I didn't get time to explain, so I request the promise from all of you that you all will read this, especially this verse number 10. You can star mark it. It's a very important verse. See, text number 11 is question 2. He is asking about the essence of all scriptures. Bhurini bhuri karmani shrotavyani vibhagashah atah sadhotra yatsaram samudhritya manishaya bhuri badraya bhutanam yenatma suprasidati. They are asking, there are so many scriptures, in all of them there are so many duties. Bhurini, bhuri karmani, they are saying. So many duties are mentioned. If one has to study these Vedas, one has to spend many, many years. How to study the lakhs of verses in the Vedas? We don't know how to ascertain what is dharma. They are asking. Therefore, please tell us, select the essence of all the scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings. That by such instruction, their hearts may be fully satisfied. You see, Gita Upanishad is called as the essence of all Upanishads. Sarva Upanishadu Gavo Dogda Gopalanandana, and that it is said. Partho Vachashtir Bhakta Dugdam Gitam Tamhat. Similarly, the Vedanta is very difficult to understand and very exhaustive, and here is the Vedas and the Vedanta, the saram of it is available in the Bhagavatam. So they are asking, please tell us the essence of all the scriptures. And then the answer to this will come in 1.2.6 to 28. We'll be seeing the answers later. Then question number 3 is in the next verse. Suta janasi badram te Bhagavan satvatam patihi Devakyam vasudevasya Jato yasya chikirshaya. See, they're asking, why did Sri Krishna appeared in this world, who is the master of his devotees? Why did he appear as the son of Devaki and Vasudev? For what was the purpose of his appearance in this world? They are asking. This is question number 3. And the answer comes in many places. If you want, you can note down the answers. 1.3.28, 1.8.25, 9.4.61, and 10.8.48 to 50, and 10.33.37. 10.33.37. All these are answers to this question. It will come later. So this is question number 3 is over. And you can come to text number 17. See, they are asking. Text number 17 is question number 4. They are asking about, please tell us, therefore speak to us who are eager to hear about the adventures he performs in his various incarnations. See, that time he asked about Krishna appearing as Devaki Vasudeva's son, but now they are asking about the other incarnations and what all adventures that he is doing. Like for example, Parashuram avatar, or Matsya avatar, Kurma avatar, Varaha avatar, and all those incarnations. The answer to this is coming in the next chapter, 1.2, 30 to 33, we'll read. And also, cantos 2 and 3, full of explanation about this different avatars will come. And cantos 2 and 3 will explain the creation of universe. But actually, he is not only asking the activities that Lord performs. This is question number, which one is it? Is question number? I think one question I have skipped in between, I think, probably. Sorry, this activities of incarnation of the Lord is question number 5 actually. Question number 4 is where? Question number 3 is 1.1.12. Did I say that? Okay. Question number 4 is 1.1.17. What is it? Question number 5 is 1.1.18. Question number 5. Question number 5 is the activities of the Leela Avatar, as I told you just now. And question number 17 is in relation to creation, I think, this one. So please therefore speak to us who are eager to hear about the adventures he performs in his various incarnations. The great entrance is Narada Singh of them. And then the question number 18 is, narrate to us the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Godhead's multi-incarnations, such auspicious adventures and pastimes. See why there is similarity in this question 17 and 18. See, question number 17 is about the Purushavataras. You know Purushavataras like Mahavishnu, you know, Garbhodaksha Vishnu, Shiradaksha Vishnu. There is description about creation, in relation to creation. But question number 18 is about Leela Avataras, which the Lord performs after the universe is created. He enters into the universe as different Leelas, no? Leela Avataras, like Matsya, Kurma, Varaha and all that. Huh? That is question number 5. And then you can go further to text number 23. And that is the last one. Where have the religious principles gone after Lord Krishna has disappeared? That is question number 6. The answer to question number 6 is Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.43, Krishne Sadama Pagate, 1.3.43. That is for answer to question 6. Answer to question 5 is appearing in the Canto 1, Chapter 3. We will be studying it. Scheduled incarnations, it will come. Canto 1, Chapter 3, Activities of Leela Avataras. And Canto 2, Chapter 7 also. We will be reading. That is Leela Avataras. And in relation to creation, that we will be studying in Cantos 2 and 3. Huh? It's about creation of the universe. So in this way, the sages are asking simply 6 questions, one after another, with some additions in between. In between, they are appreciating Sutta Goswami's association. They are saying, Vayamna Vitrupyam Uttama Shloka Vikrame Yatashnivatam Rasajnanam Swad Swadupade. They are saying that we have come to hear about Krishna, Supreme Lord, and you know, we are never satiated by hearing about him. We want to go on hearing, you know, like that. They are glorifying the message of Bhagavatam to encourage the speaker. So in this way, the first chapter ends here. Actually, we started a bit late today. By the time we began, it became 7:15. So how many of you can come at sharp 7? You are confident? Okay. You can come at sharp 7. Okay. Next week, sharp 7. I don't know, next week we have the class next week? We have the class, yeah. So next Wednesday we'll start at sharp 7. We'll try to finish by 9:15 sharp. We will not go beyond that. Actually, this chapter is a little difficult to finish in a short time because the first 3 verses are very heavy verses, solid. They have a lot of tattva. Otherwise, I believe that the other syllabus what we have fixed, we may be able to go faster. So these verses purports, what I have done, I have underlined the vital points on the purport. Whenever I am reading out to you, I am only telling you those points. In fact, Govind Prabhu sometimes, what he has done, he has cut and pasted these important points and he has made his own small Bhagavatam of the underlined vital portions. So when he goes to US and all, he carries that. It's very easy. Because sometimes Prabhupada may say a lot of things which we know before. Because somebody sometimes turns any page and reads. So Prabhupada keeps saying many things again. So we could underline the vital portions. It will be helpful when we are going through it. So any of you feel we are going at too fast a pace, or is it all right for you? This pace is all right. Only the questions I had to rush through today. Hopefully you will try to read it. And another good news for all of you, especially the boys, that whatever class you are attending here can go into your sadhana card that much time. Today whatever time you came from that time to 9:20, I think about 2 hours you can include in your reading. And purposefully I arranged this Bhagavatam study because I know that in the name of preaching you will not study. That's why we arranged this Bhagavatam study circle. If you come together, people cannot catch me also, they can't catch you also. We both will be studying Bhagavatam, you know. That's the whole idea. So I will try to do my best by preparing in advance with underlined purports. I think the future purports may go a bit more smoothly. But we have to start class in time. 7 we have to start. Actually, we didn't arrange for prasadam because we thought that every class may have variable audience. Many others are coming also. And our devotees, many of them are taking the same khichdi, what is cooked in the temple, in the Brahmacharya Ashram also. So I felt you all won't mind it. Don't think this khichdi is only for the newcomers or visitors. It's very nicely made. And our Siddhanathaya Prabhu eventually is going to make varieties also, other than khichdi also. So you all can take it. If you haven't taken, if you all want to take at the end of the program, we can reserve it in a bucket and keep it and they can serve you. Alright? శ్రీ ప్రభుపాద్ కి, గ్రంథరాజ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం కి, గౌర భక్త బృందకి థ్యాంక్ యూ వెరీ మచ్.
హరే కృష్ణ. జస్ట్ వన్ కపుల్ ఆఫ్ అనౌన్స్మెంట్స్. అటెండెన్స్ షీట్ ఈస్ సర్క్యులేటెడ్, ఆల్ డివోటీస్ ఆర్ రిక్వెస్టెడ్ టు మార్క్ దర్ అటెండెన్స్ అండ్ ఆల్ ప్రొజెక్ట్ మేనేజర్స్ దోస్ హు ఆర్ అబ్సెంట్ క్యాన్ మేక్ ష్యూర్ దట్ దే రైట్ అ లెటర్ అండ్ సబ్మిట్ ఇట్ టు మీ, దోస్ డివోటీస్ హు ఆర్ అబ్సెంట్. ఆల్సో దోస్ ఆఫ్ యూ హు డోంట్ హ్యావ్ భాగవతం, ఇట్స్ అవైలబుల్ ఆన్ కన్సెషనల్ రేట్, యూ మే కాంటాక్ట్ జీవదయ అండ్ గెట్ ఇట్. అండ్ జన్మాష్టమి ఇస్ కమింగ్ క్లోజర్.